You want to add value to other people, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be real estate related. But yes, it's great if you're able to raise money or you're able to find deals or, you know, some kind of real estate related value. But let's say you meet somebody who maybe they want to play the guitar. And if you know how to play the guitar, you can offer them some free lessons right there. Instant value. And then they're going to like you, and then they're going to want to do business with you. You never know where things go with this. But by adding value to everybody around you at all times, good things are going to come back your way.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Matt Jones is the CEO of Hawkwing Capital, which raises capital from passive investors to own large apartment buildings. And he also wrote the book about real estate. That literally is the name, the book about real estate, and co-hosts the Pillars of Wealth Creation podcast. He also owns 244 beds of senior assisted living. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here.
Hey, man, thanks for coming on today. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So in 2015, I bought my first duplex. It was a live-in. I house hacked it. And I saved up money from my W-2. It took me a few years before I was able to buy a second triplex. And I was just so frustrated at how slow my progress was going. Like, the idea was like eventually own like a large complex. And I was like, oh, this is going to take me 40 years before I can scale up at this pace.
Right.
And then I learned about real estate syndication in 2019 and thought like, oh, this is bananas. Like it solves all my problems with, and now I don't have to save up my own money. I can use other people's money and I don't have to wait to scale up to bigger properties. I can just jump in and start right now. And so then I found a mentor to help me out, who is actually I co-host the podcast with now. Mm. And recently raised some capital with him for a 228 deal in Kentucky. And then looking to raise capital for some other deals as well.
Man, that's really, really cool. I mean, 2019 till now, that's pretty fast progress, I would say. I know you said you had a mentor, but what are some other things you feel like you did right that other people should emulate?
I think, well, the biggest hurdle that I had to get over was my own mindset. So if you can change your mind of thinking like, how can I do this, rather than like, oh, I couldn't buy a 100 unit place. Like, whether you say you can or you can't, you're right. I think it was Henry Ford that said that. And so getting into the mindset, like, I can do this. I just need to figure out how, or better yet, who I can work with to get me to that level.
Right, right. That's really cool. Tell me, what are you guys doing? I heard you say something about an opportunity there in Louisville. What are you guys doing right now to find opportunity? You moved on from the triplex world because that was too slow growth. You moved into mostly multifamily, and I hear some also assisted living. But what does opportunity look like for you right now?
It's primarily through broker relationships. So we built connections with brokers, and so we're seeing a lot of on-market deals. But I think some people prefer off-market or on-market. But with on-market, it's you get all the numbers, like it's presented in a way that the seller is ready to sell, and you have the broker there to help make sure everything falls into place. So plus, through on-market deals, we get a lot of deal flow. And right now, you got to look through a lot of stinkers before you find that one gem.
Yeah, you do. How are you underwriting those to where it makes sense? That's what we're seeing a lot in across all asset classes. Is you just, I don't even know how the current buyer is making this pencil. So what are you guys doing differently, you feel like?
Well, we just go through the numbers. Yeah, I'd say 99 out of 100 deals, we just kind of shake our heads at, like, I don't know how this is going to work at that price point. But once in a while, we find that one that actually does pencil in. And then when we think, oh, what did we do wrong in the underwriting? But we're still underwriting conservatively. We're still stress testing the numbers to make sure, like, okay, if there's another recession and we get to like the record high vacancy rates or record high concessions and things like that, is the property still going to make money to ride through a potential recession? If yes, then that is a good deal. But a lot of these properties are, like you say, they're going at these prices that if anything goes wrong for these operators, they're going to lose their pants.
Talk to us about positioning. How are you positioning yourself in front of the sellers? It's almost an art, I think, of putting yourself in front of the sellers in a way that makes the seller want to work with you, which is kind of a weird place to be in the cycle where it's like, hey, wait, like, why am I trying to court you? Shouldn't you be courting me as the buyer? But it's not the way it's working. What are you guys doing on that front?
Well, it comes down to relationships as well. Relationships with our lenders, property management, the brokers, when you can build a reputation, or if you don't have one right now, partner with people who already have a good reputation. And so you can say, like, in my team, this is our experience. And to show to the sellers that, like, Yes, we can close. We've closed on X number of units and taken so many units to a full cycle and such. And we already have the professional property management that's local, that's going to do a good job, that already does a great job with these other properties, just to show the seller, like, yes, we can close. Yes, it's going to go smoothly and we can make it happen.
Right. Now, I saw we read that there in your bio there in the intro that you are also involved in assisted living. So is that a core focus for you, or is that just an opportunity that came your way and you participated in it? Walk us through kind of being diversified across asset classes.
Yeah, that was an opportunity that came up my way, and the numbers were really good. I had an IRR of 21 plus, so I couldn't say no to that. And I come from a background of managing like group homes for adults who have disabilities. It's really, really similar, the operations side, which I'm really well versed with. And so they had multifamily is where my focus is, but it's on a different cycle than senior assisted living. Like multifamily is high right now. Senior assisted living, in a lot of times, and we focus on rural areas actually, that's cheap. So we can buy these mom and pop shops for a song from operators who didn't do well during the COVID, but we're hitting the silver tsunami here with the baby boomers that are getting to that age where they need or starting to need more intensive care from senior assisted living. And so there's just a lot of opportunity right now. The demand is going to be much stronger than supply here shortly.
When you look at things like that, is that a potential core focus for you when you see opportunity?
Yeah, I think there's the potential that we might shift focus to that being our primary. But multifamily is our bread and butter. We understand that. We've done well with it. And we know how it works.
Got it. Got it. That is very, very interesting. Tell me, what's an excellent piece of advice that you were given, say like in 2019 when you said, hey, I want to switch. I want to go into something that can scale quickly. What's something somebody told you you feel like that everyone else should also hear?
You have to add value to other people without expecting value in return. And if you try to just take and take from other people, take their knowledge, take their time, take their money without giving anything in return, you're going to... It's really off-putting. Like you want to add value to other people, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be real estate related. Yes, it's great if you're able to raise money or you're able to find deals or some kind of real estate related value. But let's say you meet somebody who maybe they want to play the guitar. And if you know how to play the guitar, you can offer them some free lessons right there. Instant value. Like, and then they're going to like you, and then they're going to want to do business with you. Or you never know where things go with this. But by adding value to everybody around you at all times, good things are going to come back your way.
What are some surprises or potential pitfalls maybe that you learned or that you feel like other people should avoid?
I think my biggest mistake starting out was trying to do it all on my own. Mm-hmm. I consider myself a smart guy, very capable. And so I was trying to do everything on my own. And I was just spinning my wheels for years before I realized I needed to take a nice big slice of humble pie. And I'm very shy. And so I had to force myself to network with other people and just get out there and find people to partner with to make things. And once I did, my career propelled much faster than I could have on my own.
When you do a lot of education in this space, I think that's where your book about real estate really comes in. What are some of the common questions or common things that people come to you and you say, hey, we're going to start at square one? What's square one for you? And then how do you kind of work them through the process?
Square one is exploring the different types of asset classes and deciding which one, two at the most, but preferably one that you want to focus on right away. And because like there's a million different ways to make money in real estate. And if you try to do them all, you're going to do them all poorly. So you're much more better being niche and focused. And like my book, it covers the whole spectrum of real estate investing. So to help people explore like self-storage units or mobile home parks or multifamily or all these different things. And then you choose like, okay, this one makes the most sense to me. This one I think I can do, and then become specialized in that.
Got it. Got it. So yeah, if I'm hearing you right, you say pick two at the most asset classes, and that goes back to the, and I'm even going to contradict your statement there a little bit, but it said he who chases two rabbits catches none, right? If I could speak today. And I like that idea of that you got to really, that there's a lot of ways in this business that you can make a lot of money. Talk to us about success. If you were to define success for you, what is success and where do you look? What does success look like for you in the future?
You know, success is just having goals that really expand you as a person and having a good plan to be able to achieve those. So whatever it may be, whether it's financial freedom, so you can hang out with your family more, or being able to travel, which I enjoy, but just, I guess, living the kind of life that you want and taking the actions necessarily to make that happen. And as for the future, I anticipate I'll transition more from an active investor to a passive investor so that I'll just have my various investments and enjoy the free money that shows up in my bank account.
I hear that, man. I'm a passive investor in a lot of deals, and I can't wait till that is all I am. I love being an active investor, but there's something really special about that H in your account once a month. And you're like, oh, that was relatively easy. I could do more of that. So absolutely hear that. Raising capital. You went out and said, hey, I figured out that this industry, I don't have to have all the money myself. I can go out and pool other people's capital and take down deals. Talk to us about the capital raise side for you. Can you walk us through that journey, getting your first deal done, maybe some of the hiccups or the things that you would do differently on that front?
Yeah, well, I guess just in general, when you're raising capital, you want to make sure your people that you're raising capital from understand what they're getting into. So you don't want to be like some scammer type of person. You know, I'm very upfront and honest. So I make sure that I'm not taking somebody's like last $50,000, for example. I don't want that. Like, if you need that money to live off of, this is not the right kind of thing for you. So I first make sure that they understand that, like, the risks and potential rewards and what will happen with their money. And then I show them like what, you know, that, like, I myself am investing my own money into the deals that I'm raising capital for.
Right.
I just increase their confidence that, okay, like, he's putting his money where his mouth is. So this must be a good deal.
Right, right. What were their strategies or, I guess, methods you employed on your first capital raise?
Yeah, you start out with friends and family and like work acquaintances and people like that. But I would say my approach is I first ask somebody like, hey, could I ask you a couple of questions about your finances? And if they say, they're usually say yes. If they say no, that's fine. But once they say yes, then you say like, would you be open to a 10% return on your, through an investment? And which is conservative, very conservative for a real estate investment or the kinds that I'm looking at.
Sure.
And they'll generally say yes, because that's better often than the stock market will provide them and with their 401k and such. But once they say yes, then I say like, if I found an investment that could provide you with at least that much a return, would that make sense for me to contact you about that and just run it by you? And then they're going to say, yeah, sure, because that doesn't hurt for me to just like tell them about something. And then, okay, if I found something like that, how much money would you have available to be able to invest in that kind of deal? And then they'll tell me like whatever amount it is. And so now I've got sort of a soft commitment and I can shut that down and like get their contact information. What's the best way for me to contact you if I do find a deal like that? Because I don't have anything right now, but you know, if I do, so then you can contact them. You've got their soft commitment already. And then you can show them like, hey, there's a deal that's going to give you a 15% IRR or what have you. Then they're going to be like, all right, here's that original money that I said.
Are these conversations you're having with, like, under what, in what environment are you having these types of conversations?
All environments, because if you don't tell people about what you're doing, nobody's going to know. So you really have to be open and honest about yourself and authentic with that. And plus, I think of it as, oh, there's all these people around me that are missing out on great opportunities if I don't tell them about it.
Right.
And so I'm doing them a disservice by not having this conversation with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's there. You're absolutely right there. I think it's uncomfortable. I'll be honest. I think the questions you asked there are excellent, but I was kind of envisioning myself asking those so directly. And I'm like, oh man, that makes me uncomfortable a little bit. And like you said, in all environments going, hey, tell me about your finances. Like, well, maybe no. Like, okay. But it sounds like you've had great success with that.
Yeah. I would say the first time I did it, I certainly felt awkward, but I got through it and I'm like, oh, that wasn't so bad. I can do that again.
Do you ever get any complete just like, no, we're not talking about that responses?
Well, I haven't yet, because it's not like you say like, hi, my name is Matt. Can I ask you a few questions about your finance? Build a little rapport first.
Right. Sure. You know. Right. I get it. Okay. No, that's cool. I like that. And I think that's an encouragement to our audience and even to me to be more direct, where it's just like, hey, look, we do have excellent assets. We have excellent opportunities for investors and we're achieving amazing returns for them. And it's bad on me if I don't actually just go out and tell people about it.
Yeah, you're keeping people from achieving their financial goals, from achieving their dreams by not talking about it.
Right. Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I had an investor call me. She had received her first distribution in a passive deal. And maybe this is bad. It was extended family. So don't hang me for maybe not doing my know your customer as well as maybe I could have. But they're like, hang on, wait. So I get this money. Like, you get a distribution. And yet I still retain my equity in the deal. I'm like, Like, you still have your 100 grand in the deal and you're going to still get a quarterly payout. And they're like, wow, where's this been all my life? I'm like, I'm on to something here. So yeah, I wish they'd understood maybe the mechanics of the deal slightly better, but that's okay. It all worked out. So that is fun. You're absolutely right. Not sharing that stuff with your investors is, yeah, something we should all take certainly more seriously. What are you guys working on right now that you are excited about?
We're in between deals right now. My partner, he just did his Firestaff 506C offering, which I wasn't involved with. But before that, I did some that raising for that 228 unit deal. So looking for the next deal, being really patient, being really cautious right now, because we're potentially seeing some changes, I guess, in the market, but being prepared for that too.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Matt, I've enjoyed our time today. Certainly appreciate you coming on, telling us how to get out of the triplex rat race, if you will, and how to scale and grow quickly. Certainly look forward to sharing the links to your book here, the book about real estate. Again, that is the title of the book about real estate. That I don't know how you got that title, but that's awesome. Couldn't have been absolutely more clear. And then just some of the values that you added today. Adding value to other people without expectation is one of the ways to certainly grow. You said one of the mistakes you made early on was trying to do it all on your own. And the bigger deals we go, certainly the more this becomes a team sport, and then also about sticking to your niche and not going too wide. So I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Is there any last piece of advice that you would like to share with our listeners?
It takes three things to get going in real estate. Educate yourself, network with other people, and most importantly, take action.
Love it. Matt, for listeners, want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
You can go to my website, hawkwingcapital.com, and you can schedule a call with me through there. And you can also even download a free chapter from my book as well.
Awesome. Matt, thanks so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Yep, you bet.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.